Go ahead.
Well, I'd like to thank the organizers of this session and hope that you'll get something out of my presentation, which is going to look at both modeling approaches and measurements or sensing for some of these applications that have been mentioned. So I took one of Susan's slides to kind of illustrate the challenges of these urban soils and how the material that you often find resident in these sites can be quite challenging. So I'll talk about the hydraulic properties and also how some of the models, especially numerical models, can be useful in understanding some of these situations. As a graduate student starting a PhD, I was working with some a little bit crazy scientists trying to grow plants in space. And I remember thinking about the practicality of that and wasn't sure that it was good use of money. But along the way, I learned a lot about these really confined environments, containerized plants. You want to launch something into space, it's like $10,000 per kilogram, and so you're going to try to reduce mass and energy consumption and all kinds of things. And then if you're going to rely on this for food, there's really no room for error. You got to be real careful about how you design it and make sure things are going to work well. So I think in these urban environments, you find a lot of similarities in how restricted some of those root zones and other aspects of that are. And at the bottom of the slide, you see some of the materials that have been used for growing plants in space. They're often aggregated materials that both can hold nutrients as well as retain water and be drainable. I think one of my major focuses as a PhD student was optimizing the properties of this plant growth media. And some of you have talked about how that also applies to these maybe golf course green designs and things. So in this slide, you see the my mouse will work here. So this little blue line here is the water retention curve in terms of saturation and the matrix suction energy. Hydraulic connectivity, you see that dropping off exponentially in decreasing the saturation level. And then this line shows you how the gas diffusion is increasing, decreasing as the water content is increasing. And so hydraulic connectivity and gas diffusion are opposed, and so there's this optimal water content. In this case, largely driven by the oxygen level, so oxygen concentration drops off rapidly at this saturation, and so this sort of became the optimal water content in this case. But that varies with other parameters like the depth of the media and the respiration rate. So this changes a bit as conditions change. So we used a numerical model. This is a 2D model, Hydrus 2D, to kind of look at how water would behave in these media under lack of gravity and also with gravity. And so in microgravity, you're putting water in these porous tubes to supply water, and then the water can move outward and since it's not draining, it's only driven by the capillary forces, the gradients that are developed in the media. On Earth, of course, gravity pulls that water down in these coarse materials, and you get most of that water going to the bottom. And so if you look at this optimization scheme, the water retention curve really drives a lot of this. You can see that the profile of this is really a function of that water retention curve. If I were going to use finer materials, finer media here, it might be saturated. You may not get any drainage in that case. Okay, so talking about engineered media, we talked about how can we simulate the conditions of microgravity on Earth. I mean, that's a real challenge here. And one way we looked at doing that was to take layers of different size sands and put their water retention curves together. So I've got six curves here. And then decide on what layer thickness would give you this optimal condition. And so you see the outcome of that. the water retention curves kind of zigzag back and forth, and what I end up with, if you look at this bottom dark dashed line, that might be my water holding capacity in a 20 or something centimeter profile. But when I layer these sands, I can actually something like quadruple the water holding capacity of this material, this profile. Also, you see that right here, I'm maintaining the profile below saturation. So even after I irrigate this thing and let it drain, I still have 10 or 20% aeration. So then gas exchange can take place in this situation. I avoid saturation. Okay, so this concept actually got applied in a research project, and this is with Bruce Bugbee's graduate student. They were trying to grow plants in a sterile environment, and sand was chosen. And they wanted to make sure that it didn't get saturated in the sand layer, but they wanted to also maintain enough water that this thing didn't dry out over the weekend and run into other problems. And we were able to create this manufactured root zone, and it worked out quite well for that application. Okay, now looking at common potting soils versus what you might find in an urban setting, finer textured soil. This chart shows the matrix potential versus water content curve. So a peat perlite mix, water release curve looks something like this, and this might be a silt loam soil. So it's one thing to have this potted material in a pot where once you irrigate it, it drains and the bottom still retains quite a bit of that water. But when you take that potted plant out and stick it in this soil in the park strip or wherever, that soil is not anywhere near zero potential or not very wet generally. And so even at minus 50 centimeters of suction, which is still quite wet, that silt loam could be still close to saturation, but the potted plant has lost all its water under those conditions. And so looking at the hydraulic connectivity and water retention become critical for designing some of these systems and understanding what happens. So I spoke of numerical models. Here's a simulation with this potted plant root ball shown in the blue, so there's roots there taking up water at a potential rate of a centimeter per day. And the surrounding media here is a silt loam. So I've put three different boundary conditions. Here's an impermeable bottom boundary. I got this picture from an excavation on campus, and there was a parking lot asphalt layer a couple of feet down in this case. Here's a free drainage bottom boundary, so that whatever that material is goes downward deep enough that it doesn't impact the drainage. And then here's something like you might find in a golf green where they've tried to create this perched water table. So it only drains once you get a saturated bottom layer there. So here's the numerical simulation of that, and just to see how this root ball is losing water. This is over a couple of days simulation, and how differently the water is being drained out of the root ball into the surrounding material. You can see the bottom here, the water content. There's some somewhere in the 20s up to 80s for the, at least for the potted plant material. And so quite quickly you see the free drainage scenario pulling that water out of the root ball, and also even with the seepage phase being drained quite quickly. And so the numerical simulation allows you to not only consider this static profile that we can get from the water retention curve, but also some of the dynamics of how soon, how quickly that system is going to be losing that water. Okay, well, the other part of what I wanted to talk about today was the sensing instrumentation part. What kind of measurements can be beneficial for some of these applications? And I'll leave it to you all to decide if this is useful or not. A lot of this comes out of my own research and my own experience with some of these things. So I'll borrow a slide here from Pam, going back to the soil properties. What properties are of interest to you folks? Certainly the texture and structure is important. The water retention, in terms of the potential, the energy of the water, and the water content. The temperature, electrical conductivity is often useful for a variety of reasons. Thermal properties, and then bulk density and porosity. And all those physical properties then can affect the processes that are also critical. The infiltration and drainage, evaporation, erosion, transport of solutes, heat and energy transport, gas exchange, freeze-thaw cycles, and more today, emissions of radiation for remote sensing applications. So here's a sort of an overview of sensors. A lot of you are familiar with the sensors on the left, common water content sensors. And these measure or infer dielectric, and from that you get water content. And many of them have now added electrical conductivity and temperature measurements. So those three are pretty common now. On the right, you have time domain reflectometry, which a decade or two ago was a very elaborate system, a $30,000 Tektronix TDR, the multiplexers and data loggers that go along with that, and a huge investment in training and understanding of how to run that system. Well, just this year, Acclima came out with a TDR that's all housed inside of this head and a wire that goes to the data logger, so now you can multiplex these TDRs out of a single port. It's a huge advance in my mind to bring this technology, and the amazing thing is the price of the climate TDR fits within this $200 to $400 range of water content. So there's a big contrast there in the quality of the of measurements, and I don't have time to go into that, but to me, it's kind of like the difference between antenna TV versus cable TV. I mean, these sensors on the left are working at 10 to 100 megahertz, and the TDR is working in the gigahertz range, and there's quite a difference in the benefit for measurements. Now, going back to the properties with these measurements of water content, temperature, electrical conductivity, we can track processes like water infiltration, solute transport, and freeze-thaw cycling. In the last couple of decades, there's been a growth in heat pulse measurements using heat pulse probes. And you can see single needle, double needle, and at our lab, we've been developing 3 and 5 needle probes. And these probes give you thermal properties of soil or porous media. And why do you want thermal properties? What good are those? Not a lot of direct interest in those specifically, but when you go back to properties and processes, it's been shown recently that thermal properties can be used to infer processes that are quite expanded over the previous list. Water infiltration, drainage, solute transport, heat and energy transport, as well as freeze-thaw. So we're seeing some improvements in some of the process monitoring that can be done with these heat pulse probes. Well, in 2001, Ochsner, Horton, and Wren introduced something called thermal time domain reflectometry. So this is coupling the thermal measurement with the TDR measurement. And so you get water content as well as heat capacity with this coupled measurement. And in this illustration here, basically the thermal TDR will give you a measurement of soil heat capacity and a measurement of water content. And we know the density of water and the heat capacity of water, and we can estimate the heat capacity of solid particles in the porous media. And so from this relationship, you can actually calculate the bulk density from this coupled set of measurements. So my excitement in this is that if you can measure bulk density and porosity, that could be a valuable tool for some of these applications where you're going in and trying to decide whether or not you want to use the material that's available there or replace it. How well does this work? In 2008, Lou, Wren, and Horton showed in the laboratory they could get about 5%, had 5% error with these measurements in these controlled conditions. Going to the field, it's more like 10% errors associated with these measurements. And that was 8 years ago. I think the improvement in these measurements is advancing as we've applied additional algorithms to improve those quality of those measurements. Okay, so I guess in summary, engineered soils are obviously becoming more and more common, and more users or contractors going to be applying these principles, and so I think there's some principles from soil physics that can be applied here. Numerical models can be useful, especially for looking at the dynamic aspects of some of these systems. There's no thermo TDR available on the market now, but hopefully in the coming years someone will commercialize that device and provide additional measurements for porosity and bulk density. They'll be useful. Thank you.